Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer with John Adams of the Knoxville News Sentinel. John, it's prediction season. That's what you do in the preseason. You talk about quarterbacks and you make predictions. We talked about quarterbacks last time. This time we'll make predictions. Really, predictions would have already been going if we would have had SEC Media Days, but no Media Days this year. Did you miss Media Days, John, or were you just kind of like, I guess I really didn't like going to that after all?
I think what I missed about it was not the writing or the what we were exposed to, but it's just seeing got friends of mine throughout the league. You get together. It's the only time I see a lot of these guys, some of them that have been doing this almost as long as I have. So it's kind of a reunion of sorts. And I much prefer doing it, though, in Birmingham. If we're not going to have it, prefer not to have it in Atlanta. I just don't like that.
Has anybody been doing it as long as you have, John?
I think Kurt McNair, who writes for website in Alabama, Kirk's been doing this probably longer than I have. Once they did away with Skywriters Tour, which seemed to be about in 1981 and started this, so we're talking about early 80s.
Cecil Hurt? You got Cecil beat?
Cecil's quite a bit younger than I am, but he might have started doing this about the same time in terms of SEC Media Days. Yeah, I'm definitely not the smartest guy in the room. That's you. I'm the oldest guy in the room in a lot of cases. But it's always good to see somebody in there at Media Days, which I invariably do, that's really more decrepit than I am. Moves slower, looks a little more lost.
There you go. All right, John, we're gonna have some fact or fiction scenarios here today. Get us started off with the rivalry games. I'm going to exclude Vanderbilt from this conversation. But Tennessee will beat at least one member of the rivalry trio of Alabama, Florida, Georgia. They'll beat at least one of those three. Fact or fiction?
I'll go fact.
Would you like to say which one it's going to be?
Yeah, it's not a close call. I've thought all along that Tennessee could beat Florida. Now it will hurt that it won't be in Neyland Stadium. I mean, it will be a Neyland Stadium, but it won't be a typical Neyland Stadium. There won't be 100,000 people screaming there. But while that's a disadvantage, I like the idea of playing Florida in December. I think you could have cold weather. You could have bad weather. And I think that would help Tennessee, a run-oriented offense against a pass-happy Florida offense. So of those three games, I just don't think Tennessee is capable of lining up and beating those other two teams. I think it could beat Florida.
I'm going to say fiction. I will say Tennessee loses to all three. Yeah, Florida might be the most winnable. At one time, I thought maybe Georgia. But the more it goes, the less the less bullish I am on Tennessee being able to beat Georgia. So I would say perhaps Florida's the best chance of the three, but I'll say fiction and that they go in 0-3 against those rivals, which would make them 0-9 against those rivals in the Pruitt era. So I really think that they do need to beat one of the three.
Do you think Tennessee will be competitive against Alabama and Georgia?
Yes, I think they could be competitive in all of those games, whereas we've not seen much of that in past seasons. But I think I think at least two of those three games will be within 10 points, which I would call competitive if you're within 10 points. But maybe not all three. I'll say somewhere along the line, maybe they lose by two touchdowns plus. Perhaps Alabama would be the one I'd pick, but I think they can be within 10 points in two of those three games. But winning one, I don't know.
There's a big difference in being competitive and winning,
right?
And I think last year Tennessee was competitive with Alabama deeper into the game than it has been recently, but then there were extenuating circumstances. if Tua can play, let's face it, that game probably wouldn't have been remotely close.
Fact or fiction, John, Eric Gray will rush for at least 800 yards this season. I'm taking down that 1,000-yard milestone because we've gone from a 12-game season to a 10-game season. And so I'm lowering, to me, an 800-yard season with no scrub opponents sort of equals a 1,000-yard season. So that I'm setting the line at 800. Fact or fiction, Gray will have an 800-plus-yard season.
I will go fact on that. I really like how he's developed as a running back, running behind a good offensive line. Might hurt him a little bit because he has to share carries with Ty Chandler. Based on what I saw at the end of the year, though, I think Eric Gray is a little bit better running back. I don't dislike Ty Chandler as a running back. I think they're both good running backs. So I think – tell you what, I wouldn't rule out the possibility of both of them running up for over 800 yards.
This one's maybe the toughest scenario I have cooked up for us today, but I'm going to just barely say fiction. Although I guess they would tell you there's no barely fiction or no barely facts. It's either true or it's false. So, I'm going to say fiction. I think he's going to get close. You know, I do worry about the possibility of missing a game for all these players this season. And I'm with you. I think part of what works against Gray, and this is to Tennessee's advantage in getting to 800 yards, is the fact that Ty Chandler is going to get about as many, if not just as many, carries as Gray. And so I think they could have two 700-yard rushers, or they could have a guy at 725 and 625, which would be a nice combination there in a 10-game season. You know, because the other thing is you got to get to an 800-yard season, you can't have too many bad games. You know, you can't have too many games where the defense just stuffs you to 22 yards rushing in a game. So, yeah, I'm going to say just barely misses it.
Well, here's the thing to consider, too. Let's say in 9 games, he totals 575 yards in 9 games. That's pretty doable, isn't it? Don't you think?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Then he gains about 350 on Vanderbilt.
And based on last season's game, that seems pretty doable too, right?
Well, he's got a better offensive line. Vanderbilt's defense may be somewhat better, but
– you just outlined the path to 800 for Eric Gray right there. All right, moving on to the quarterback position. Fact or fiction, Jarrett Garantano starts at least 8 games this season. He started 7 games last year in a 13-game season, but he's reclaimed the starting quarterback job. Will he start at least 8 games in this 10-game schedule?
Well, based on how good I think the running game will be, the fact that he's proved very durable, I say he will. Fact.
I'm going to agree with you on this one. I'll say fact.
Normally, we agree on something.
Yeah. And I think that durability is huge, you know. That's all goes a long way, and being able to start 80% of the games as a quarterback is already healthy enough to play 80% of the games. And Garantano is always available.
So, yeah, hits the bell every time.
All right, fact or fiction, and I'll preface this with Tennessee has had D'Angelo Gibbs, wide receiver, opt out of the season. Hasn't had nearly as many opt outs as some schools have, but. You know, I think it would be foolish to think that we've seen the last of them. So fact or fiction, Tennessee will have at least 3 players opt out this season.
Now, you're saying 3, you're not counting D'Angelo Gibbs.
I'm counting Gibbs, and I'm saying they'll need at least 2 more to make 3.
Fact.
You think at least two more will join him?
Yeah, because we could get right. I mean, there's so many variables here. The closer we get to the season, somebody gets sick or whatever. Yeah, I have to go fact there.
This is a tough one for me too. I think I'll say fiction. I'll say, and this is maybe just a wild guess, but I'll say one other person will join D'Angelo in opting out, but they might have a lot of other guys miss a game or two here and there throughout the season. But in terms of a true opt out, I'll just say they keep it at 2.
Well, the problem with it is you can opt out for more than one reason.
Right.
I mean, right. There's the NFL, and here's a factor in that to me. you think you're going to play in the NFL next year, closer you get to the season, you might just think, you got to be mulling this over. And you might
especially
just
as you see more and more guys that are going to be drafted, you know, opting out. It's kind of a lonely feeling sometimes when you think you've made you're comfortable with the decision, but then all your peers are making the other decision. That can cause a man to second guess his decision.
Fortunately for Tennessee, though, I don't know how many guys fit this bill. With Tennessee, I see more guys that could help themselves by playing this year. Guys in the defensive line, DBs, I just think they could enhance their draft status by playing, and I think they'll want to do that.
I agree, and that's ultimately as I was deciding whether to say fact or fiction there, that's what at the last minute tipped the scales in favor of me saying they won't have three or more because I don't think they're going to have – I mean, Trey Smith could do it. I mean, he's one guy that makes a lot of sense.
Sure, but who other than he? Would Bryce Thompson opt out?
I don't know why he would. You know, I think he stands to benefit from – if he wants to go to the draft after his junior season, then I think – he would really stand to benefit from a really good junior season. So,
can I change my answer? Or am I locked in?
No, you're locked in. Once you punch that button. Fact or fiction? Cade Mays will play for the Vols this season.
Fact. We may not know that until kickoff time on the season opener. I just think he will. I mean, I'm not good at predicting these kind of things. So maybe I should go against my instinct and say fiction, but this is a really hard one. I mean, I thought he would already be eligible. So I tell you what, why don't you answer first this time? I haven't given an answer yet. Really.
I thought you said fact. I said I was going to lock you in, but that's fine. This is the last time though, John, from here on out,
okay.
You're locked in.
Okay.
I will answer first. You just never know what the NCAA is going to do, but you know, since they ruled against Cade Mays, I believe this is the timeline. Since that happened, they said that this season will not count against eligibility. And so they're making it a free season for everybody anyway. The optics might just be so terrible of keeping Cade Mays sidelines that I'm going to say he's going to reverse course and that that the NCAA will reverse course. In fact, the NCAA will clear Cade Mays to play and he will do so for Tennessee.
Well, as I said earlier, fact.
Okay.
I stand by that.
All right. We're in agreement then, huh?
Yeah, we are.
Okay. Well, I will lead off this time, John, not be influenced by your answer. The season finale against Florida is the most important game on Tennessee's schedule this season. And I'm going to say fact that game against Florida is the most important game on Tennessee's schedule. It's a rivalry game. Tennessee could be 0-2 against rivals Alabama and Georgia at that point. Would be really nice to get a win over one of those three this season. It's the season finale. Could be the difference between a 5-5 or a 6-4 season. Could be the difference between a 6-4 or 7-3 season. And I really just think it could change the way fans look at this season, whether a success or not, and how they're feeling going into 2021. So I'll say fact that Florida game is the most important game on the schedule.
This is your easiest question. I agree, fact. Already wrote a column about that. I think that you look at how much credibility Tennessee gained by winning its last six games in 19. I know they weren't against great teams. They were against mostly losing teams. Nonetheless, gained a lot of credibility, got some momentum going for this year. I think it really fans appreciated how the team bounced back. They appreciated what Jeremy Pruitt did in helping bring the team back. So I think if it beat Florida, aside from just having a dreadful overall season, if it goes into that game with four losses already but beats Florida, I think the carryover impact would be huge. I think Tennessee fans would view the program differently. What's Tennessee? One of its last 14 against Florida, or I think
15, I think.
One, 15 now? One in 14 or one in 30. It's bad. So yeah, if it just beats Florida, we don't know what could have happened to Florida by then. But I still think it would have, just have a huge impact, because Tennessee just doesn't beat Florida very often. And getting back to your last question, I think Florida's a team where some guys could opt out.
Mm.
It's got more pro prospects than Tennessee does, I would say.
So maybe by December, rather than travel up and play in a cold, possibly a cold game in Knoxville, just say, ah, the heck with it. Because by that point, you know, they might have ruled bowl games are not happening this year anyway, but beyond the playoff and the six. So if they do that, they might say, we're done.
Can't win the division. We lost to Georgia again. What are we going to do about it? Kyle Pitts.
Prime example of a guy that could head to the NFL, right?
Well, he's only this is only his second season, though.
That'll trip him up then.
Well, maybe he'll just stay out for a couple of years. But I do think there's some DBs, some good DBs on that team. Marco Wilson could do it. He's had injury issues. So, yeah, I just think it's a great opportunity for Tennessee, and I think it would have a great favorable impact on the season. Even if Tennessee's had a mediocre season going into that game.
All right, John, last season we saw – I thought I had this number in front of me, but I can't find it right now. So let's just say Tennessee had a true freshman start at least one game last year. I think it was at least a half dozen, maybe one or two more, but several true freshmen started last year. This year they return a veteran roster on both sides of the ball. So fact or fiction, Tennessee will have at least four true freshmen start a minimum of one game this season.
I'd have to go fiction on that. You said it. So many proven players coming back, proven depth at a lot of positions. Yeah, I definitely feel that's fiction.
I'm going to say fact. I feel like I could have made things easier if I would have set the line a little bit different, but that's not what we're about on this podcast, John. We encounter these
vulgar. Don't be anything.
That's right. I'm going to say fact and say they hit four on the nose. I'll say Jalen Hyatt starts, possibly as soon as the season opener. I think possibly two freshmen could start at least one game in the secondary with Key Lawrence. I guess he's no longer going by Keyshawn Lawrence. The official roster has Key Lawrence, so we're going to have to make that adjustment here on the podcast. We've been calling him Keyshawn Lawrence, but I'll say Key Lawrence starts a game. I'll say Danico Slaughter could start a game in the nickelback position, or possibly safety, but more likely nickelback. And then I'm not going to name the fourth guy, but just say somewhere up and down the roster they'll have a fourth freshman start, whether it be Harrison Bailey starts a game, whether it be another one of those freshman wide receivers start a game. I'll say they get to four on the nose.
Well, in one thing in your favor on that answer is we don't know how many guys might have to sit out in quarantine. So that creates opportunities. And when I say Tennessee, I think has exceptional depth this year. Some of that depth is what you pointed out is it's related to the recruiting class, because I think part of that depth at wide receiver will come from those guys. And Hyde, as you mentioned, is a really good prospect. So that makes sense. Maybe even in the – what about Omari Thomas in the defensive line? Is that?
Yeah, I think it's possible he could get a start. The bar is really so low for some positions to get a start. I mean, starting at defensive end or it's not the same as starting at quarterback or left tackle. You know, you start at quarterback or left tackle, you might play every offensive snap during the game. You could start at defensive end and still only play 40 – or defensive tackle even play 40% of the snaps in a game. They play so many guys up front. So, yeah, it is a low bar to just get one start on your resume throughout a season.
If you would have gone three, I would have probably said fact. Four, you were really pushing the envelope.
That's just the way we do it on this podcast. Final one, John. Tennessee last year had a first-team All-SEC selection in Trey Smith. Brent Samaglia was a guy that earned All-SEC honors. Nigel Warrior was actually first-team by the AP. I think a couple other guys might have, from the coaches, got second-team honors, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, that's a long preamble to saying, fact or fiction, Tennessee will have at least three players earn first-team All-SEC selection.
My immediate response is fiction. However, the issues we brought up in the podcast, there's so much uncertainty with guys. We don't know what happened. We may still, who knows? We've got a few weeks before the season. How do we know three or four Alabama guys won't opt out, start working on the NFL? LSU guys are dropping like flies. Georgia's got a lot of potential guys. It is really hard to be first-team All-SEC. I mean, you have to be really good. I mean, you got to be almost a second-round draft choice to me to be All-SEC, or close to it, don't you think?
In a normal year, yes, but you've had so many players opt out. That may not apply this year. I mean, I'm going to say fact. I'll say Trey Smith is again first-team All-SEC. I think Brent Samaglia is kind of an X factor there.
Never know about kickers.
Yeah, and he's got just as good a chance as anybody of being the best kicker in the SEC. Was one of the best last season, and you have Rodrigo Blankenship out the door at Georgia. So, you know, like you said, you never know. A couple missed field goals is all the difference between, you know, all SEC and not, especially in a 10-game season. But I'll say Samaglia, and then I think they can get another one somewhere. Maybe it's Henry Toa at linebacker. Maybe it's Bryce Thompson at cornerback, although there's a lot of good cornerbacks in the SEC. Yeah. I think that would be a stretch. But Toa maybe at linebacker, because so many guys, you know, so many of your top linebackers in the SEC, if they're pass rushers, you know, they're a lot of times classified as a defensive end. But you do have a lot of good middle linebackers still in the SEC. But I think Toa is a guy that could be enough to claim maybe a final linebacker spot on all SEC.
Well, you bring up a good point, because you start looking at all SEC first teamers. Some of these guys are first team All-Americans. Derek Stingley, LSU's cornerback, he's only a sophomore, but I mean, that guy could say, well, I'm not playing any more college football for the next 2 years. He'll still be a number one draft pick. He is a great cover corner, just tremendous player. So you take Dylan Moses, who missed last year for Alabama as a middle linebacker. He's healthy again. He's first-team All-American. So that's just two. So when you try to make it first-team All-American, and I mean first-team All-SEC, you're talking about really elite players. There's not a lot of shame in being second-team All-SEC pick.
Right. Yeah, I may have been a little too bullish there in saying three, but I think Samaglia is the key. If he can claim one of those spots, and then I really count on Trey Smith to claim another, I guess I just take the field, you know, take the whole rest of the roster and think maybe they can get one more guy in there. You know, maybe Eric Gray goes wild this season. I'd say maybe I mentioned Bryce Thompson because I think he's one of the Vols' best defensive players, but there's so many good cornerbacks in the SEC. I don't know that he would be on my short list of guys that could be first team all SEC. Not a criticism of his game, but just how strong that position is. But, you know, maybe a guy like Eric Gray, where, you know, there's a couple good returning running backs in the SEC, but I don't know that there's that many more I'd rather have than Gray going into the season. So maybe I'd put him on the list of guys that could possibly, in a run oriented offense behind a good offensive line, you know, reach up there to first team.
I tell you what, I think Eric Gray might be my second pick behind Trey Smith, because he's playing behind a great offensive line, and I look around the league, and yeah, there are all these 4- and 5-star running backs, but a lot of them have been injured or haven't done anything yet. LSU has got three guys that are going to share carries. Ole Miss, Jerron Ealy has got a lot of potential, but is that offensive line good enough? Is the team good enough? So you just, when you start breaking it down and you go, Auburn doesn't have is the kind of proven running back it often does. Even Georgia does, and it's got four guys that look like they can play, but Zamir White hasn't done anything yet. Injury issues. Eric Gray would be my second pick behind Trey Smith.
All right, well, I'll go with that too, but I'm gonna rest my fact vote on the foot of okay. Brent Samaglia, and Samaglia I trust to get the ball yep. to.
And let's, if we pick an outside, a real dark horse, a first-time starter, it could be all SEC. How about Quaveris Crouch? It looks like inside linebacker.
Well, you'd vote for him at linebacker and running back, probably.
It's a two-way first-teamer.
Yeah. Maybe just all-purpose. You know, they got an all-purpose position there.
There you go. Crouch.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there we go. All right, John, that's going to wrap us up for this time. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.